What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? It's estimated over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com today.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, our players are fast and strong and brave, and your guys, not so much. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. So, do y'all love sports?
Yay.
No,
me neither.
Yeah, yeah. We're nerdy non-sports types.
I can enjoy playing a sport. I'm not usually so much into watching them.
I enjoy watching a baseball game once in a while. Oh. And I love hockey.
I can get into hockey and soccer, football, as now, of course, I've been told to call it by many people.
Yeah, hockey is a sore subject here in Atlanta. Poor Thrashers.
Yeah.
But at any rate,
wait a minute.
That,
no, there is a sport I know you love.
What's that?
And it's the fine masculine ballet of professional wrestling.
Oh, that is a sports entertainment, and I do genuinely love it.
You know, sometimes we think about what's the future of, and we can't think of a thing.
Right.
How about sports?
Oh, well, how
come
about
on.
It? Yeah, all right. So you had a specific science fiction film where you wanted to describe the sport in that and how that's got to be the future, right?
Yeah, you're talking about the movie Starship Troopers.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, of course. We're always talking about Paul Verhoeven's Starship Troopers.
Yes, the oeuvre is so deep in the world of sci-fi sports.
Yeah, well, no, I actually brought this up because it was when I was trying to think of future sci-fi movies that have sports scenes in them, this was just the first one that came to mind. And there's really no good technology in it as far as I can recall. The uniforms look weird. They're wearing these shiny jumpsuits, and they've got weird looking helmets that are more kind of like hockey helmets than football helmets. And people keep doing these jumping somersaults like 8 feet in the air. They don't explain why. I don't think you usually see that in real football.
Doesn't really give a notable advantage.
No. And also the football looks like it's made of metal. And I'm not sure why that would be a thing people would change. Like,
Because when I want to catch quick moving objects thrown at me by highly athletic people, I want those objects to be made of metal.
Really dense, so that way it causes huge amounts of damage.
Right. It might just be a regular football painted to be shiny and gray. I don't know if the
because that's the future.
It. Exactly,
yeah.
Right. Futuristic things like spaceships are shiny and made of metal. So, you know, this football, by the same logic.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't really work. So what about Blurn's Ball?
Blurn's Ball?
Futurama.
Yeah. Oh, right,
That's a phenomenal sport.
Yeah. It's a wonderful sport.
Yeah.
I can't really explain the rules. I think they're kept obscure on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems to be something about hitting a ball that's attached to a tether, and then robots pop out of holes. I think there's a multi-ball setting, like in pinball machines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I know there's some other ones.
Rollerball.
Yeah, Rollerball.
Sure. 1975 hit with James Caan.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a terrible remake of that?
You might be thinking of Death Race. Yes, actually, there was a terrible remake of Rollerball. You're right.
Or Pyramid, the game that was played in the new version of Battlestar Galactica there that came out, although we never saw it as it was really intended to be played. It was all like post-apocalypse version of Pyramid.
Yeah.
So.
As far as Star Trek's concerned, I think the only sport that survives is fencing, since Sulu goes crazy with one episode.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's one of those things that we thought, well, this isn't an episode of you never see that in science fiction. We really wanted to look at what are some of the cutting edge technologies that are starting to debut in sports today in various parts of sports, not just the performance, but sometimes the training or just keeping people safe.
Right. Well, I think in reality, we're already doing better futuristic sports tech than the Starship Troopers metal football.
Yeah. Just being able to, if you are the type to watch a football game, you know, you can see where the first down line is on your television screen. That alone, that simple technology alone is superior to the Starship Troopers version.
It's pretty nifty.
Yeah. Well, okay. Here's the first thing I would ask
about
the future of sports. I sometimes watch people playing football or boxing or something like that and see, it looks like there's a lot of injury going on here.
Yeah.
Is there a way to still get all of the athletic enjoyment people get out of playing and watching contact sports without so much risk to your body?
Yeah, that's a big concern, obviously. And, there have been some very high profile news stories that have come out over the last few years of football players in particular suffering terrible injuries from multiple concussions, sometimes, to the point where a couple of people have lost their lives because they've suffered such terrible brain injury. The thing about a concussion, which, it is an injury to your brain, it often is caused by the brain shifting, twisting, stretching rapidly or colliding with the inside
the brain
of
pan.
Your skull.
Yeah.
That it causes damage to the brain cells that you can recover from with rest, but it does make you more vulnerable to further injury. And it's not always something that's easily detectable. It's not an external injury. So, unless you're paying close attention to someone, you may not notice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are sometimes indications, like a person's walk might change, the way they hold themselves might change,
and
their
speaking
patterns,
yeah.
Right. But in the context of a game that's really fast moving, you might not pick up on it. They might not really be aware of it either. They may just, the idea of, oh, I had my bell rung. I felt a little out of it. And they run the risk of getting even more seriously injured if they continue to play. It's so serious that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control here in Atlanta, created a document that educates people on the dangers of concussions in general and in football in particular.
Hmm.
It's specifically geared for parents and for coaches, for the people and officials, referees. It's for the people who would be watching over football games to know what to look for in order to spot problems before they become really serious. It's a big deal, and it's really important, and it's got some people thinking, well, what can we do to help minimize the risk of concussion? And one of the big things is actually not related to technology at all. It's just related on how the game is played. And the big bit of advice I've seen is keep your head up. That's the big one, is that don't put your head down in anticipation of a tackle, whether you're making the tackle or you're about, you know that you're about to be tackled. Keep your head up, and that helps, reduce the risk, keeping in mind that rotation can also cause a concussion. It doesn't have to be impact. So if your head is rotated very quickly, that could be enough to create a concussion. So that's one thing, is just behavior. Now, that being said, there are people working on technologies to help protect football players.
Mm-hmm.
So a biomechanical professor at Purdue developed a football helmet liner that's supposed to reduce G-forces to a player's brain by 50%. So
wow.
The thing about football helmets, you know, they got that hard shell, which is really there to protect against skull fractures.
Right.
So it's not it can't necessarily protect against concussions, because that energy gets transferred through the helmet to the person's head. And while they might not suffer a broken bone, they could still suffer a concussion. So this liner is meant to absorb some of that impact and disperse it so that you receive less of that hit as a result, and thus reduce the risk of having a concussion. The way they designed it, the way this professor actually designed it, was first he put sensors in helmets between the padding and the actual helmet to detect the strength and location of hits during a particular play. Like, he would be able to see mm-hmm. how that player and was playing, and whether or not they were at danger of a concussion or other serious brain injury. And also, he wanted to find a way to try and reduce this rotational force, this other problem of if a player's head turns too quickly, that could be an issue. And so his idea is to have a double shell helmet, where you have an external hard shell, then you have a layer of padding, and then you have a internal hard shell, and then the liner. And those two shells can move a little independently of one another, so it takes some of that rotational force out.
Sure. Interesting,
They don't know yet if this will actually be effective in preventing concussions. They said that it's going to take some years of testing to see how well it performs and whether or not it actually is reducing that risk, but at least it's a move toward that direction.
But they're not the only people who are using sensors to monitor that kind of thing, right?
Right. The Florida Times Union reported that helmet sensors are required now in the Arena Football League. So Arena Football, are you familiar with the Arena Sports Ball? Okay, so Arena Football is played indoors.
Okay.
The field is smaller than an NFL field.
Sounds like Starship Troopers football.
It's faster paced. It's meant to have higher scoring games.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of an alternative for the big NFL game. So it's like the third largest football league behind the National Football League and the Canadian Football League, I believe.
Okay. What was it? The one that was invented by that guy from one of the wrestling
Vince
federation?
McMahon?
Yeah.
It's similar.
You're thinking of the XFL.
Yeah, the
right?
XFL,
yes.
The Extreme Football League.
Oh, which got shut down after like a year.
Yeah,
that's
it's
right.
No longer a thing. But
was that just mainly to have people body slamming each other on the field?
They played by a variation of arena football rules.
Okay.
So variation being a kind word for it. Yeah, the XFL did not last very long. But the sensors inside the AFL...
Did nobody tell them that extreme doesn't start with an X?
This is a problem a lot of people had.
Yeah, X Games, come on, Joe.
Specifically in the early 2000s
and late 90s. It's not unique at all.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All
I apologize.
Right. Getting back on track. So the sensors measure impact and can actually alert players and coaches and officials when a collision is strong enough where a concussion may have happened. The sensors are attached to little blinking lights that are on the base of the helmet. And if the impact is greater than a certain threshold, the lights start blinking. The official says, all right, well, you cannot play until you are checked out. The player has to leave the field, go and be checked to make sure that the player is all right before they can return to play. So the hope is that that will end up detecting any early issues so a player can be taken off and put on the injured roster until they're able to recover and then return to play. Because, again, you know, it's a concussion is something, if it's not really, really severe, it's something you can recover from with enough rest.
Oh, sure.
But if you don't have that rest, then you're just going to aggravate that injury and possibly turn it into something far more serious. Not that a concussion isn't serious already. It is. But anyway, so that's the other element of sensors in actual football uniforms that are meant to help the safety of the players.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the only place where we're seeing sensors. We'll get to some other elements a little bit later, and it gets kind of, I don't know, a little half awesome and half kind of creepy. But but between that, I have another great story about a training system that is meant to help take some of the wear and tear off football players by reducing the physical toil of training. You guys might not be aware of this, but football players have to practice a lot.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I go by this one field. The train ride I take goes by this one field, and I see football players drilling on that field every day from late summer all the way through fall. And they run plays over and over. You know, they're making sure that their agility and their physical skills are as high as they can make them, as they can train them. But they're also running specific plays to see what plays work in different situations. So quarterbacks have access to a playbook. That playbook has all the different potential plays they have practiced that everyone on the team knows, so they can work together and coordinate to give the best performance they can. But these plays are sometimes you have to make adjustments depending upon how the defense lines up.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have planned this particular play and you all get in formation and then you notice that the defense is really antithetical to what you had planned, you have to start coming up with a new plan on the fly. So one of the things that that might be helping players in the future is something called the AXON system, AXON. So instead of running the same physical play dozens or hundreds of times so that you can learn all the different variations and the best way to make a decision, it is a system that kind of simulates the picking of a play and how it plays out, so that quarterbacks get used to making snap decisions in decreasing amounts of time. So when it first starts, a quarterback who's, and it actually can be used for any position on the field, mm-hmm. but quarterbacks are what they tested it on. A quarterback will start a play, and then the conditions will be such that they have to decide who would they throw to in this situation, right? Who is the person most likely to be able to catch based upon coverage, all that kind of thing. And then they have to make that decision. And then the time for them to make the decision decreases as they do well in this game. And that allows them to train their ability to make fast, accurate decisions, which is all part of football, mm-hmm. right? So it starts to get to a point where the amount of time you would have would be about the same as the point where you would break from a huddle to where you're lined up at the line of scrimmage. And then you have to commit. So the idea is that originally this system was meant for people who were recovering from something like a concussion. It was a way to help train their minds to get back on focus and to kind of get an idea of how they were performing before putting them back in play. But now it's also being used as a way of actually training football players so that they take some of that physical training and they convert it to mental training, so that you don't have to have this incredible physical toll on mm-hmm. the players during the training season. I mean, obviously they still need to do it.
Right. I assume that being, you know, in shape is part
of
it. But
I think having a bunch of really, really super sharp football players who are all very pudgy and slow is not an effective way of winning a game either. So, but it is interesting that they're taking out some of this physical toll because injuries can happen in training as well as in games.
Yeah.
So this is a way of making sure that you keep your team healthier longer, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. But okay. So you said that we still had more to say about, some of those sensors. Let's get back into that conversation.
Yeah.
And sensors can do a lot more than detect things like injury these days.
Sure.
They could be used for data analysis and tracking, right?
Yeah. So, obviously, people who are really big into sports, a lot of them are also big into statistics, right? Tracking everything from how a player, like how many yards rushed, if you're talking about football,
mm-hmm.
or if you're talking about baseball, number of home runs, their batting average, all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, sports has always been this really data heavy kind of pursuit or hobby or entertainment, depending upon, you know, however you're approaching it.
Is this what that movie Moneyball was all about?
Moneyball certainly does play a large role into this sort of thing. Yeah. The idea of being able to look at a person's actual performance, relate that into some sort of quantifiable, system, and then use that to have meaningful conversations or just show off how much you are able to retain. But, you know, we're only able to gather so much information usually unless we were to put, I don't know, sensors in uniforms of like football players, for example. which is happening.
So you're not relying on just the keen eyes of the observers, but you're actually getting mechanically produced data.
Yeah. So, for example, you know, there's certain things that we can look at, especially for like a televised game, right, where we can see exactly how far someone ran during a play on a football game. But we don't necessarily know how quickly they were moving, how fast is their acceleration, how long does it take them to get to their top speed, you know, what position were they in at a specific point in the play. That kind of analysis takes a lot of time, and it's hard to do on the fly. So if you are a broadcaster and you're trying to relay the events of the game to the audience and explain what's going on and why the game is unfolding the way it is, you know, you're often limited by the amount of information that you can have at your disposal. Well, that was kind of the idea behind the NFL going in and putting sensors into players' outfits, actually into their shoulder pads, essentially.
Hmm.
So it's meant to track their acceleration in particular, but other metrics as well. It was developed by a company called Zebra Technologies, unless you're from the UK, and then it's Zebra Technologies. They use RFID enabled sensors. They decided that RFID was the most reliable means of transmitting information, rather than some other form like Bluetooth or whatever. They decided RFID was the way to go. And so, players can be tracked, like their position can be tracked based upon the way that the RFID communicates with various receivers that are set up around the stadiums, that are hardwired to a server, and the server collects all the data and makes sense of it and can even turn it into visualized data very quickly. So you can get something like an arrow that shows the acceleration of a player and be able to really communicate why a play unfolded the way it did. So if you saw a really effective blitz, for example, in football, you could say, well, this guy, this defensive player was moving at such a speed, there was no hope for the quarterback to be able to evade it, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to saying the quarterback delayed in throwing the ball, because often in the course of one of these games, if you don't break down the data that way, you make assumptions as to why a play unfolded the way it did. This could give both the audience and coaches and players valuable information that will end up shaping the game in the future.
Of course, I can see an application of this that ties into something we've talked about on this podcast other times, which is real-time health sensing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
like,
actually
the kind of the paste-on tattoos
yeah.
we've discussed that can, you know, easily, seamlessly go on you and keep track of all your heart rate, your mm-hmm. vital functions.
The NFL plans to do that in 2015.
Oh, wow.
So right now it's sensors that are meant to track the movement of players. Mm-hmm. But in the future, it will also be sensors that do things like heart rate, lung capacity, body temperature, which could presumably be broadcast to spectators. So spectators could actually
wow.
see.
That's a whole nother level of fantasy football.
Yeah.
That's
right. Look, his heart's not even racing. This guy is a cool customer. Or this guy is, you know, this guy's really starting to sweat it. You know, so.
Wow. He's doing that with 500 milliliters of urine in his bladder.
Yeah. Don't. Well, it's not going to be that precise that early, but who
Hopefully.
Knows in the future. But this is also something that the coaches may use, in future. Like training, for example. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it actually gets broadcast to spectators, I don't know. The way I was reading the report made it sound like this would in fact be part of it. I'm thinking, you know, if I'm a professional athlete, I don't necessarily want people to know how my body is performing at any given time. That's a little creepy.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm fine with my physician and maybe my coach. But, you know, Bob, who's got the cheap seats, knowing what my heart rate and lung capacity is a little weird.
Yeah, that's a little bit strange.
Yeah.
But the NFL certainly isn't the only organization that is looking to this kind of data collection to help its players out. Over in the UK, McLaren, the Formula One high-end sport car company,
yeah.
has a branch called McLaren Applied Technologies that designs sensor systems to monitor and track athletes' performance as well. And they've paired up with rugby teams, UK Olympic rowers and cyclers, and a bunch of other kids to help them like micro refine their training and their in-game performance.
And even in the design of some of the sports gear, like, like the bicycle you mentioned, McLaren has done some work with designing bikes that they ended up taking into account the rider as part of the bicycle in order to create high-end bicycles that would be used in things like the Tour de France. And we're talking like super expensive gear here.
We did a whole episode on McLaren over on we're on Forward Thinking right now over on tech stuff. And so if you'd like to hear a little bit more about that, you can check out that episode.
Yeah, their company headquarters is totally like the place that you think James Bond goes to, that's McLaren headquarters.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to know how this high-tech data collection technology applies to the sport of baseball.
Baseball? One of my favorites. I do enjoy going to a baseball game, or baseball as the rest of the human race calls it. So baseball, one of the systems that's been rolled out recently, it was announced back in 2013, I think, is that a lot of parks have incorporated the iBeacon system. Now, iBeacon is a proprietary low-energy Bluetooth system that Apple created. And low-energy Bluetooth systems, you can think of it as like a network of transmitters that can both transmit and receive information. So it can track your location by figuring out which ones you're closest to. So kind of like triangulation. Mm-hmm. So really you just need enough to provide coverage for whatever area you're looking at. And that will give you the information you need to be able to track person's movements and what they're doing within a certain area. So we might see this incorporated into shops in the future. In fact, a few places have used it. Now, for stadiums, for baseball, the way it's currently being used, or at least the early implementations, are largely about things like allowing a spectator to upgrade their seat. For example, so your ticket might be on your smartphone. You come in, you check in, you've tapped into this this iBeacon system, and
you say, "I want to go to the skybox."
Yeah, you get a notification saying, "Hey, for a certain upcharge, you can move into the skybox, and you can choose that." Or maybe as you're walking near concessions, it gives you a coupon for a specific concession, whatever that might be. Or maybe it's merchandise, like a baseball cap or a jersey, that kind of thing. Now, in the future, they may also use this to transmit real-time data about the game to people. Like, so if you have the app on your phone, you might get real-time information about, again, player stats, which could be incredible for people who are into fantasy football and really like to micromanage that kind of thing. Or it may be that you get updates on games that are going on in other stadiums, so, or other parks. So which is big in playoff season,
trust me.
When you're watching your team play and you're thinking, well, if we win and this other team loses, we go to the playoffs, then you really want to be paying attention to multiple things at the same time. So this is a possible future that we'll see where iBeacon will transmit this information. Right now, it looks like it's more of a kind of consumer sort of orientation where we're using it to, you know, just maneuver through a park and be able to buy things. So we'll see how it gets, how it evolves over time. I expect that we'll eventually see this be more of a second screen kind of experience for people who are actually at a game. And if you've ever been to a baseball game, there are some stretches where you might be, you know, might want
to
look at
a
different, might look at something other than an empty park.
What is completely not happening at all on the field.
Yeah. That occasionally does happen.
But so I wanted to talk a little bit about like Skycam and some of the other technologies that are helping home viewers feel like they're part of the action in sports ball games.
Okay.
Yeah. I was curious about what televised football looked like back in like 1968. So I looked it up on YouTube. It's tiny little men running around in a tiny place.
It looks a little bit like SNES styled football.
Yeah. And there were some closer shots. I think that there were some maybe cameras on the sidelines, but still you're not really getting in the action. There's a lot you can't see.
Sure. By contrast, if you've watched American football in the last, say, decade or so, you've probably noticed this device zipping along on wires above the field, and you've probably seen footage from it, too. That is, in fact, a Skycam, and it allows for those really dynamic, sweeping shots that fans of football and of, you know, the Olympics and NASCAR and IndyCar races and basketball and hockey and golf and concerts and feature films have all been enjoying since it was invented in the early 1980s by Garrett Brown, who is the same dude who invented the Steadicam.
Oh.
The rigs are pretty expensive. They're like tens of thousands of dollars. So that's why you only see them in these kind of larger sports and concerts and stuff like that.
Sure.
But here's how they work, because it's pretty fascinating, and I did not know this before. There's a really great article about it on howstuffworks.com, which is a plug, in fact. But so they work like this. From four high points at corners of the field, usually in like stadiums that are already built, that's lightning towers, but it can be a constructed rigging if they need to. Four reels, each containing like thousands of feet of Kevlar reinforced rope that's coupled with optical fiber cables, spin their contents out to a spar where the four cables meet, kind of in the center of the field. And that's where the camera rig is held. So, you know, you've got computer controls and also a pilot and also a camera operator that are all working together to manage this pulley system of ropes and stuff. And all the footage from the camera is sent back out over those fiber cables, so it can go out in real time, or very close to real time at any rate. And there's gyroscopic stabilizers that keep all of those camera movements smooth, as you might expect from the dude who invented the Steadicam.
Wow.
So it's pretty nifty, and there's a relatively limited number of cable failures that have resulted in the Skycam, say, plummeting to the earth.
Also, wow.
But, you know, given that it is so expensive to set up, there is talk that in maybe the near future, drones might be used to get cameras around the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a similar to...
Which I find even more terrifying, but...
the motion picture industry, same sort of thing. The idea of being able to get a crane shot without having to rent a crane.
And also having something more stable than most crane shots, because...
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, there's some places, like in the middle of a stadium, where you can't really put a crane, because it would probably be an impediment to play.
Yes.
So this would be a way of getting some of those incredible shots. Clearly, that sort of thing would require lots of tests and to prove that, in fact, the system was fine and that a drone was not going to go spiraling off into, you know, the cheap seats or something.
And that no one could hijack the signal or anything
Yeah.
Little important stuff like that.
This is Jonathan's drone now.
But as for something else, like a kind of technology that is currently being used, that's still pretty impressive to me. So this is a list that changes all the time. But right now, as far as I know, Everbank Field, which is in Florida, has the record for the largest stadium screen in American football. There are other larger screens that are out there. The screen that Everbank Field has 55,000 feet of display area.
Wow.
55,000 square feet.
I don't even understand that. That's a lot.
That sounds like a good thing to watch failed public wedding proposals.
Yeah. Boy, you just haven't lived till you've seen Kiss Cam at 55,000 square feet. I'd want to play Halo on that.
Yes.
Stop looking at my screen. I can't help it. It's in my full view of vision.
It's literally everywhere.
But at any rate, you know, that's one of those technologies I expect will continually see get updated. The idea of a screen that can show people who are not at that, you know, at the sidelines, being able to get a good view of what's happening. Because like you were saying, Joe, I mean, otherwise your experience being actually at the game may feel a lot like watching a football game in the 1960s. You just see a bunch of people running around at a great distance. So it's one of those ways of balancing that out and giving a better experience to the folks who are there. Well, there's tons more information about sports and technology and science that are all coming together to kind of shape the way the games are played and how people prepare for them. But there's just too much to really cover in a single episode. So I'm sure we'll revisit this and probably talk about other specific sports in the future, not just primarily football and baseball as we did here. So if you guys have any suggestions, maybe there's a favorite sport of yours that you really wonder, like, what's the Puppy Bowl going to be like in 20 years.
Future of bass fishing.
Yeah, that could also be it. You know,
you're joking, but I'm positive that there is that people are working on that.
I mean,
thing.
The fact that we have fish finders, I mean, you know, that alone, that wasn't the case
That's
when I was a kid.
Bad form.
it's cheating. So sure. Like, you need to just know in your gut where the fish are.
That's
those bass
right.
don't have the internet, so we shouldn't die there.
Yeah. It's not a fair fight.
No, okay, now I understand. Okay, well, at any rate, if you guys out there have any suggestions, because I'm not getting any useful ones here, drop me a line. You can let us know on Twitter or a Google Plus with the handle FW Thinking. You can go over to Facebook, put in FW Thinking in the search bar. That'll pull us right up and interact with us. Let us know what you like about the show. Let us know what you want to know about the future. We read all the comments. We look forward to them. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.